Welcome to the Strassman Files on Book Radio. I'm Mark Strassman. We're here today to talk to Suzanne Finstead, who has just written Child Bride, the untold story of Priscilla Bollea Presley. And welcome to the studios of Book Radio.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Priscilla Presley, who's the, as she's commonly known, who's the subject of your book,
right,
has created a myth about herself.
Correct.
Principally a myth about her relationship with Elvis Presley,
correct,
to whom she was married for a short time. And she's also built a approximately $100 million per year empire, Elvis Presley Enterprises, of which she is the executrix.
Yes.
You, on the other hand, have written this book here, exposing almost all, if not every, element of this myth.
Correct.
And adduced a plethora of lawyerly legal precedents and evidence and arguments to prove that her myth is a myth. It's false. It's either a lie or it's denial.
Exactly.
Or it's some combination thereof. Two basic questions about that. One is, do you expect that your research and your writing of this book and publicity of it and its selling and people reading it is going to have any impact at all on the standing of that myth? That's the first question.
You know, I didn't know how to answer that question in anticipation of the release of the book, but I can say, having been kind of on a whirlwind tour up to today, it has been, to my surprise and delight, embraced, certainly by the media. I have not even had the scintilla of a question about the veracity of the findings in the book to date.
Right.
The fans have embraced it. I think the fans, who have been sort of suspect of Priscilla since day one, have intuited throughout that something about her story didn't ring false, and I think that's part of the reason. And they were correct, and they've actually, some of them have hugged me. I was in Memphis recently at a fan fest, and they would hug me and say, we've just been waiting for someone to write a definitive book about Priscilla and tell the truth.
So in a way, they're happy because you're reclaiming the Elvis that they want.
That's just it. They feel as though he now has a voice, that she was able to speak in Elvis and Me, her memoirs, and
right,
now Elvis has had an opportunity posthumously to respond.
Right. One of the people in your book says that book should have been called Me and Me.
Yes, Larry Geller said that.
Right.
Elvis is spiritual guru.
Okay. Well, that, why don't we get a little bit then into why you wrote this book and how you got to the place where you did and why you wrote it and a little bit about how you went about doing it.
Well, I was sort of casting about for the subject of a biography. I wanted to write a biography. My
right.
first book was about the Howard Hughes estate case, which was semi-biographical, and then I sort of veered a bit and did a couple of true crime books and wanted to go back into the biographical realm and choose a subject who's both sort of mainstream and commercial enough to be viable in the marketplace,
right,
but at the same time who could hold my interest for the
right.
period of time that it takes me to do. It had to be a passion project for me.
How long did it take you to do this?
This one was in rapid time for me, about a little bit over 2 years, and it was really condensed toward the end because there was a real pressure on me by the publisher to try to get this out in time to coincide with the 20th anniversary of Elvis's death, which I had not, by the way, strategized in any grand marketing scheme when I started the book. That
right.
was a sort of happy accident.
The research was obviously of two kinds, sort of library research
yes.
and interviews.
Mm-hmm.
There's a massive bibliography at the end of
yes.
articles and books and so on. What did you did that first?
First the research?
The library type research? Or was
no,
it
we're hand in hand. Yeah, it was contemporaneous.
If you can summarize probably tens of thousands of pages, what were the main questions that emerged from your book research that you wanted to answer in your interview research?
Well, you know, I don't know if I had so many questions in that I was really just sort of generally probing, not knowing what I would find. I have found from experience that it's better not to have any sort of predisposition or presupposition,
right.
to just sort of let the material find you. So
okay.
I tend to, if anything, err on the side of asking too many questions, and
right.
then I'm often amazed at what that fishing expedition produces.
Okay.
And in this case, I just began to rapidly see that this myth that you described earlier, this sort of fairy tale that
right.
Priscilla created about her relationship with Elvis, was almost in all parts false.
From what you said there before, that the fans are embracing it, the media is embracing it, is Priscilla the last one who's not?
You know, I expect that she's not. I don't know that for a fact. I called her when I got my author's copies in
right.
and had a conversation with her, said, I've gotten the books. I'd like to personally deliver one to you because
right.
I felt that she was kind enough to spend hours and hours talking to me and to not really closed down too many people close to her from talking to me, and that it was the honorable way to proceed
right.
to bring her a copy of the book.
Right.
And with that, I enclosed a note saying, if you have any questions, let me know. I haven't heard from her. I expect that she is in shock. I really think the book will be shock therapy for her, because she's in what you aptly described earlier as this probably state of denial.
You make the argument, which I find convincing, that after making the argument that your facts are right and her story isn't,
mm-hmm.
that it would be for her. In fact, the very last sentence you have in the book
yes.
is addressed to her, and
yes.
you say, you know, it would really help you as a person, and it won't hurt you at all for you to deal with, what?
To
deal with this to yourself and to everyone else.
Yes, I really felt, you know, I have no animus whatsoever toward Priscilla. I actually have a fondness for her. I think she's a nice person. I think that she actually, in many ways, has been victimized
right.
since birth.
Yeah.
And she, I also understand why she exerts such control at this stage of her life, because she relinquished control to her parents and then to Elvis for so many years that
right.
now that she's in a position to exert it,
right.
she's sort of gone overboard.
Exactly.
And, you know, I just really do feel that if she could confront a lot of these skeletons, that it really would set her free. And as I said, I have an affection for her. I wish her only well, and I didn't write this book to cause her any pain or discomfort. I was simply trying to write an honest biography of her, and then along the way, as I saw that these myths had been created, I felt this sort of historical imperative to set the record straight.
Okay, well, let's do a little of that record setting straight now. People obviously will be able to learn a little bit here from the interview, but of course they're going to have to buy the book.
Yes.
If they want to find out all the story.
Right.
But and she, of course, had a complicated parentage and early family life, which I think we're going to skip for the purposes of this situation, and go on to the time when she was 14 years old,
right.
living in Germany with her stepfather, a captain at the time,
right.
In the U.S.
Air Force.
I have the question that occurred to me, well, tell us the story of how she met Elvis.
All right.
As you understand it.
As I understand it, she had fantasized about Elvis since she was in the fifth grade. In fact, played a game with a childhood friend called Imagine If, where she would fantasize that she was Mrs. Elvis Presley. She finds out that the family is moving to Germany, not far from where he's stationed as a GI. She determines that she is going to meet him. And one of the sort of central characteristics of Priscilla's personality is this just unbelievable self-determinism and tenacity and sort of goal-oriented personality, to the point that she even sort of recreated a hairstyle of an actress named Deborah Padgett, with whom Elvis had fallen in love but
right.
was unable to marry, to sort of set a trap, if you will,
right.
to entice him. Her mother was very much a part of this. So was her father. They were not opposed to this. They were not strict in the sense of keeping her from seeing Elvis. Quite the opposite. They were sort of co-conspirators
in this. Right. Not to get too far ahead of it, but the slogan that I remember distinctly from her mother, from Priscilla's
mm-hmm.
mother, when arrangements were being made
mm-hmm.
to take their 14-year-old daughter to see Elvis,
what
time do you want her to
exactly.
be ready?
That was
all she said.
That was her refrain.
Right.
Each time this fellow Curry Grant
right.
would drive her back and forth, that was the only question she would ask.
Right.
Curry is a sort of central character in the rewriting of the mythology. He is well known in Elvis lore as being the man who made the famous introduction of 14-year-old Priscilla to Elvis, who was then 25. Now, Priscilla's sort of fairy tale account is that Curry just walked up to her out of the blue one day at an officers' club in Wiesbaden and asked if she would like to meet Elvis Presley. In fact, according to Curry, and there are a lot of details in the book which people can read if they like to sort
right.
of document this, but
right.
I tend to believe his version, he was very enamored of Priscilla, magnetized by her in the same way that Elvis
Curry
later
right.
was.
Right.
Curry was, and he wanted to sort of conquer her. He was a Casanova by his own description, a
right.
sex addict even.
Right.
And she was rebuffing him until she found out that he knew Elvis. And at that point, she came striding into the cafeteria of this officers' club and asked if he could please introduce her to Elvis Presley, which was very characteristic of Priscilla. I mean, she has this sort of image and this persona of being so demure and sort of porcelain and excessively dainty and feminine and submissive. And in fact, she can be brazen when she has a goal in mind,
right.
which she did in this case. Curry then could see that they had intersecting goals at that point. He wanted to conquer Priscilla. Priscilla wanted to meet Elvis.
Right.
He then asked Priscilla if they could sort of spend some time alone, and she came up with a strategy by which they could do this, to pretend that they were going to the movies with Curry and his wife, Carol, when in fact they went up in the hills of Wiesbaden and sort of had make-out sessions for three or four evenings, and on the fourth evening, according to Curry, he and Priscilla had intercourse, and that was sort of the price exacted of her to effect this introduction to Elvis, which shatters the whole the huge sort of Elvis Priscilla myth, which is that Priscilla was a virgin on her wedding night at 21.
It may not be the myth that she was talking about. It was, in the sort of Campbell sense, a myth for which he was the gatekeeper.
Yes.
And the price he extracted of the heroine
exactly.
was her virginity.
Exactly so. I mean, there's a whole sort
of... Which lends an incomplete ironic twist to the entire rest of the story.
Very much so.
Because she and Elvis and her parents, presumably, I guess, were maintaining this myth
yes.
Throughout.
Preserving it, yeah.
Preserving it is. Okay. Priscilla visits Elvis in his house at 14 Goethestrasse in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that arose for me as I was reading this is, it's like a 24-hour-a-day fraternity party.
Animal House.
Animal House and sort of Ur-Graceland.
Yes.
I thought Elvis was in the army and the
it's
communists
true.
Were just over the border.
Yeah.
What was going on
yeah.
there?
He had obviously a lot of latitude from his...
I guess.
Yeah, it really was like a fraternity setting. I mean, there were parties going on at all times. I mean, he did have early morning calls, but it didn't deter him.
Not in the book. He doesn't do a single army thing in the
well,
book.
Well, that would be interesting to read.
Right.
I'd focus
right.
on the other
right.
aspects.
Right, that was fine. I didn't miss, if I could imagine
right.
what he was doing.
Yeah. But that is, as an aside, being... The pep pills and the speed was actually to get up for those early morning calls after these nights of socializing. So it does
okay.
have a relevant context.
Right. So it was the U.S. Army. It was the
yes.
U.S. Army that got
yes.
him hooked.
Exactly. Blame
right.
Uncle Sam.
Okay. So 14-year-old Priscilla, who you describe and everyone else describes as preternaturally beautiful, compelling, and just you eyes literally drop when
exactly.
they see her.
To a person, each one who described her, she must have been unearthly.
She seems to have been the JonBenet Ramsey. Of her time.
And that goes back to the childhood, which we're not going into, but people can read about this very sort of gothic backstory of a mother who was not unlike Mrs. Ramsey in a lot of ways.
And who was going to live out her dreams, et cetera.
Exactly,
okay.
through the daughter.
We have Elvis Presley now, who is threatening the welfare of the free world because of his blatant and rampant sexuality,
uh-huh.
and which reputation he has had, and
right.
which has attracted millions of screaming teenage girls and, to his side, and has terrified various parts of the musical and other establishments, but in reality,
not so.
Tell us about the vibrant sexuality of Elvis Presley, as is revealed in your book.
Well, by the time Priscilla met him, when he was 25, he was actually extremely insecure about his sexuality, and this I actually gleaned from Priscilla herself. She said that he would confide in her when they were up in the bedroom, and by the way, they were in the bedroom the very first night that she was brought to him when she was 14. And he would talk about the fact that so much was expected from him, from his female partners in the bedroom, because of his image as being
right.
a sex symbol, that he felt that it would be impossible for him to ever achieve to these sort of grandiose expectations of whoever he was with, for which I felt great empathy for him, actually felt sorry for him that
right.
he was sensitive enough to even care to try to do. He was so programmed to please
right.
as a performer that he wanted to extend that into his sexuality, and as a result, he sort of withdrew both
right.
metaphorically and physically,
right.
and preferred foreplay.
In fact, he couldn't live up to who Elvis, in quotes, was any more than anyone else
exactly
could.
Exactly so, and there was really a dichotomy between Elvis Presley, the person, and Elvis Presley, the image.
Right.
And the interesting thing here
right.
is that it was Priscilla was enamored of Elvis Presley, the image,
right.
and was actually quite disillusioned when she was in the bed of Elvis Presley, the
right.
man.
And in fact, that's the crux, the psychological crux of the entire book.
Indeed.
That, in fact, she fell in love with Big Elvis.
Exactly.
And in fact, when she finally met the real Elvis, he turned out to be Little Elvis.
Right.
And the momentum that had been generated in her life by her childhood
parents
dream.
And her dream.
And her parents and
mm-hmm.
so on, then led her to marry him.
Yes.
But that was a recipe for disaster.
Exactly right, yeah. So the great love affair was,
right.
was really a tragic misalliance.
And it worked the other way too. Elvis was in love with the image
with the
of the
illusion.
Fantasy girl who was pristine and virginal and passive and so on, which had nothing to do with the
Priscilla.
Real Priscilla.
Nothing, nothing whatsoever. So they really each had fallen in love with fantasies.
Yes, right.
Very sad.
I sort of summarized that somewhere, saying that the people marry, that fall in love with the fantasies, but marry the realities.
Yeah.
And it's the realities that have to live together or divorce
yes.
when they can.
Exactly.
So.
And their realities were woefully incompatible.
So in a nutshell, is really what the dynamic between them was.
The essence of it, yes,
right.
very much so.
So eventually, her parents essentially sold her into white slavery. It seemed to me.
In effect.
When she was 17.
Right, and an interesting aside about that, at least it was sort of fascinating to me. Again, the myth has been that from the time Priscilla met Elvis, that she had eyes only for Elvis,
right.
and that she was sort of pining by the phone when he left Germany, and she was back in high school waiting, hoping, wishing, praying that he would call her again. And in fact, she had more boyfriends clustered into that 3.5-year period than I've had in my entire life.
Right.
And she was very serious about one her senior year, so much so that she was reluctant to go to Memphis and was actually sort of spirited away in the middle of the night by her parents without even saying goodbye to her classmates. And I was always under the misimpression that she was at this Catholic school in Memphis for a period of a year or so, and it was actually only about 2 months. So it's clear to me that her parents were very concerned. They'd better get her out of Germany those last 2 months before she gets too serious about this boy she was involved with.
Graduates and marries him.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That was the concern.
Right.
And her father actually was going to, stepfather would be transferred a few weeks after he moved her to Memphis anyway, so there was obviously a sense of dire urgency to this move.
One question I had, not to mention Cary Grant, but Elvis had at least one sexual relations with a 14-year-old girl there in Germany.
Yes.
Wasn't that against the law on a military base in Germany, in the United States? Why wasn't he prosecuted by anyone?
You know, it's interesting. I had a candid conversation with Rona Barrett, who was one of the premier gossip columnists of that day, and I asked her that very question. You know, why is it that Priscilla could live at Graceland when she was 17 years old, but Elvis was cavorting with a 14-year-old in Germany? People knew about Priscilla, even though they misstated her age at 16. Even so, that was still, you know, an illegal situation.
Right.
And her explanation was that Elvis was such a gentleman with the press and so well-liked that unlike, say, Jerry Lee Lewis, who was antagonistic to the press, they were all too happy to expose his peccadilloes. With Elvis, it was sort of a gentleman's agreement akin to the sort of arrangement with JFK and Rock Hudson. And
people who were so nice to the press, so accommodating, had such friends. I mean, the press were really the only people who could out them in the situation.
Exactly.
And by cultivating them, they protected themselves.
Exactly. There was a code of silence that sort of arose.
Do you think a situation like this could happen again, or let me pretend I'm not that sure how naive I am. Maybe it is happening again. Do you think any of this could go on now with tabloid press? And
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that that's become so invasive and pervasive that there would be telephoto lenses in the bedroom of Graceland and you know, all of these encounters between Priscilla and Elvis and another teenage girl that he had with them in the bed. This would all be documented, and it would be on the front cover with Kathy Lee and Frank and the Globe.
Grail Marcus said on TV during the extravaganza a week ago that Elvis, while a great performer, failed to confront and meet his own personal challenges. And that's why his life was a failure, even though his career might have been pretty good. Do you agree with that? And how does that relate to Elvis's failure to deal with that relate to Priscilla?
Oh, I guess I would say that I agreed with that. I think that a real turning point in his personal life was soon after he moved Priscilla to Graceland, when he fell in love with Anne Margaret.
Right.
And I think that was a deep and abiding love between the two of them that would have been a very mature and healthy marriage.
Right.
But instead, he chose Priscilla. Again, the fantasy. In that case, it was, I think he was bound by a promise he had made to her parents. And he was a Southern gentleman, and he was going to honor that. But I think if he had chosen to be more realistic and to marry a woman who was his equal, his peer, with whom he was genuinely in love, he might have had a life that could have approached something like normalcy. But instead, he sort of drifted along in that fantasy in his personal life.
Right.
And in his career, I think I think he became overwhelmed by circumstances in the way that a lot of extremely famous, insulated people do.
Right.
Where I do think he tried valiantly to confront his personal challenges was in his spirituality.
Right.
He was really possessed with trying to understand why he had been selected for this kind of supernatural fame.
Right.
And that led him on his sort of much pilloried spiritual quest, which I actually find admirable, that he was introspective enough to question why he, a truck driver from the South, was, you know, almost viewed as a secular saint in American culture. And it really, I think, consumed him. And I think that no mortal could really carry that mantle. I actually feel such compassion for him. I think he was in a position that was untenable.
We're going to have to get back to Priscilla, I guess. It's her book. But,
that's true.
But there was a book about it because she married him.
Yes.
Not, otherwise, there wouldn't be.
Right. No, so
understanding him is
key to her.
Key to the
whole, and had she joined him, I think, on that spiritual odyssey, they might have had a chance. And that leads to another sort of irony of Priscilla post-Elvis in that she gravitated towards Scientology.
Right. Before we get to that, eventually she tired of being the little porcelain doll and not having sex with him and being ignored and left alone and over and got divorced.
Yes.
And she was kind of a crippled person when she first divorced him. because she had been essentially had her feet bound
right,
and every
exactly.
other part of her for years. As they split, mm-hmm. say a little bit about how, if he did, he wanted her back, and then what happened to him after the split, and then we're going to focus on what happened to her. Did he try to get her back?
He did try to get her back in a sort of half-hearted way. I think that, ironically, Priscilla's marriage to Elvis was the divorce, in that this relates to her goal-oriented personality. She was determined that she would marry him. She had long ago discovered, having lived in Graceland, that they were not a compatible pair, but by God, she was going to marry him because
right.
that was the goal, she said, and also because she would have been embarrassed having been
right.
this teenage live-in Lolita did
right.
she not actually marry him. So
right.
that once she did, that opened the door for her to be able to liberate herself.
Right.
So she was already sort of setting the stage for her liberation after she said, I do.
Her thought is next.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly so. And she found the next within the first year of her marriage to Elvis, and then sort of set about to make that happen, much as she had set about to meet Elvis.
Right.
When they divorced, Elvis was demoralized and very much embarrassed. He was the king of rock and roll,
right.
this huge international sex symbol, and to
right.
have his wife leave him
right.
for a karate teacher was more than his ego could bear.
It seems clear from what you say that it's not like he was pining away
no,
for their intimate
not.
Relationship. They didn't seem
didn't
to have a relationship.
No, no, and
but his pride was hurt.
It was his pride. And I really, Elvis knew well that he was not a marrying kind. He never should have been married. It just wasn't compatible with his
right.
personality. But he also was reared in a very traditional, conservative Southern way and had his own blend of spirituality, which
right.
compelled him to believe you marry once and always and forever.
So the poor guy is being batted back and forth by this Southern gentleman role,
yes.
by this religious role,
yes.
by this most famous sex symbol in the world role.
Yes.
And he had no opportunity to find him incompatible with each other and
yes.
with his own self.
Yes, whatever self that was, which was buried beneath
okay.
all this other.
Did Priscilla Priscilla's leaving him kill him?
The fans certainly would say yes.
Right.
Many people close to Elvis would say yes. I think that's a dramatic conclusion,
right.
possibly a facile conclusion,
right.
but I think there's something,
I mean,
an element of truth to it.
It was the food and drug abuse that
yes.
did it.
Yes.
But what drug drove him to that?
And that's the usual circular
right.
sort of
right.
thing you try to
but
do.
But because the fame wasn't as, the forces, the pressure on him from fame weren't as great in his late 30s, or
mm-hmm.
they were in his 20s?
No, I think not, although he was really sort of morally wounded and sort of mortally wounded
right.
by not being able to pursue his career dreams in film. He really fancied himself to be sort of the next James Dean
right.
Marlon Brando and was crippled in that attempt by Colonel Parker, who kept sort of putting him in
right.
these cheesy movies, whereas Elvis wanted to do something that was more profound.
Which of his bad ideas kept him from breaking away from Colonel Parker?
Which of Elvis's bad ideas?
Right. I mean, in other words, what constrained him? Why didn't he say,
you know,
I want a new manager?
Yeah, I think that Elvis, quite unlike Priscilla, was truly an artist who was guided by his heart and by his art.
Right.
He didn't want anything to do with the business side
right.
of it. He just sort of put it all in the lap of Colonel Parker
right.
and would just blindly acquiesce to whatever Colonel Parker suggested. Priscilla, interestingly, she and I talked about this. She sort of said, half jokingly, if she could have been managing
right.
Elvis, maybe
right.
their marriage would have lasted
right.
and maybe he
right.
would have had more money as well.
Right, but that's a total fantasy, obviously, because
of course.
That person couldn't fit into that role.
Exactly,
that, right.
exactly.
Right.
But she, the irony is that she was very, her head is for business, whereas
right.
his was more in his art.
She essentially reconstructed herself yet again
yes,
through,
another
through
mentor.
Mentors here in Beverly,
yes.
you know, in Beverly Hills and environs.
Yes.
And at one point then, Vernon Pressley, who was the executor of the estate,
Elvis's estate,
he died,
yes.
and he thought it over. You explain how he thought it
yes.
over, and he wanted everything for Lisa Marie, who we haven't talked about at all,
right.
and said, okay, the best way to do that is to give executrix status to
Lisa's mother.
Priscilla, which he did,
yes.
and she then, by my reckoning, took all of the interpersonal skills, business skills, and connections that she had been acquiring here in her rehabilitation
correct.
In Los Angeles,
yes.
and took them to Memphis and souped up that estate.
She, I think I describe it in the book, is that she sort of accidentally stumbled upon her calling.
Right.
No one would ever believe that Priscilla would have this business capacity. She was someone who, as you alluded to earlier, upon divorcing Elvis, literally did not know the difference between $10,000 and $10 million,
right. Right.
their divorce was almost comical in that Elvis, who had no concept of money, sort of blindly offered the figure of $100,000 to settle the divorce, and Priscilla said, sure, I don't need anything, that sounds fine.
It was a blind negotiating with the blind.
Exactly right.
Well,
and
then later she got a better lawyer.
Yeah, she got a better lawyer, and through her interior decorator, who you know, said, Priscilla, you know, you're living in this apartment in the marina, and you've got $10,000 as your decorating budget, and you're the ex-wife of Elvis Presley, what is wrong with this picture?
Right.
So Priscilla, at that point, sort of quickly educated herself
in
the ways and means of finance, and that's another Priscilla trait, is that she immerses herself in whatever it is she is occupying her at the moment. And at this point, it was business and finance, and she discovered that that was sexy to her, it was exciting, and that she had sort of a natural capacity for it. And she has really, and I don't mean to suggest that she's brainstorming with moguls and, you know, running Graceland in some, you know, incredibly intellectual way, but she does have a knack for it. She's very hands-on. She has a talent for choosing people who know what they're doing, and she is certainly part and parcel of the decision-making process that has turned Graceland into a museum and Elvis Presley Enterprises into a cash cow.
Right. Okay. Just one or two more subjects here. Talk about her non-business career, her acting, modeling, dancing career.
Right. And perfume.
And perfume. And, and how she's how she put that together for herself.
Again, it just sort of determination and immersion. She began, and she's actually an extremely shy person. For all of her tenacity, she's sort of wary of appearing in public or having a camera on her, yet she's drawn to it sort of magnetically. She took classes. She sort of forced herself to put herself in the limelight, even though it was often embarrassing. She would, you know, sort of carry on, sort of struggled with little minor modeling roles and acting roles. Eventually got a part on Dallas, again through tenacity and through a manager who was a Scientologist who was more tenacious than Priscilla, who just sort of kept pushing the name Priscilla. Presley, the name Presley has really been the key to whatever success that she's attained as an actress or as a model or as a spokesperson, which is, I think, both a curse and a blessing to her. I mean, it's been a blessing because it's made this happen, but it's a curse in that it's created a sort of almost an antipathy, I think, on her part toward Elvis and toward the Presley name. She knows that she's dependent upon it, yet she wishes that she weren't.
Yet she doesn't give it up.
She doesn't give it up, but she knows, as I think I wrote, that that's the money and the magic, and that's where all of her sort of
That's where the Elvis dust.
Exactly, that's the Elvis dust.
That's where the bag of Elvis dust.
And she's savvy enough to know that.
Next to the last subject here, one of her principal, if not the principal, dissatisfaction she had with Elvis was she wasn't getting any.
Yeah,
and so when she left, how's that been working out for her since?
Well, she's been getting a lot to continue that line of thinking.
Right.
She actually, the man for whom she left Elvis, Mike Stone, tended to kind of embody all of the traits that she thought Elvis Presley, the image, would have. He's a very virile, karate champion, extremely sexual guy.
Right.
And for Priscilla,
she met through Elvis's interest in karate.
Right. You know, I sort of make the comparison to Camelot, where you have Elvis is kind of the King Arthur character, and Priscilla the Guinevere, and Mike Stone is sort of the Lancelot, who's the first knight, only in this sense it's in karate, and Elvis worshipped his karate skills and sort of brought him into their fold to the undoing of the mythic kingdom.
Well, and that's very interesting, because I follow that image out a little further, and in fact, it's perfect that way, because when Lancelot sleeps with Guinevere, not only does it destroy Arthur, it destroys the kingdom.
Oh, indeed.
But in this version,
Guinevere restores it.
He comes back and restores it.
Exactly.
And I don't know where the Grail is in exactly, in there, but that's what happens. And then the kingdom is now flourishing bigger and better than ever, thanks to to Guinevere being in an executive position, which she never got in the
Myth.
So it's a very modern
twist
on that.
Yeah, very much so. And now, just to complete your thought, the man that she's with at the moment, Marco Garibaldi, is very much the dark, sort of swaggering, virile character she was always drawn to. And sort of evidence suggests that he, prior to meeting Priscilla, had been kind of a companion of Beverly Hills ladies.
Right.
So, I mean, he is someone for whom sexuality has been his calling card.
Right. So, in fact, that seems like a perfect match.
It is. I think that they're well suited to one another.
And they had another child. And they had a child.
They have a
child,
Navarone, who is really the love of Priscilla's life. That he is the central figure in Priscilla now in her 50s.
Last subject. Scientology, of which Priscilla is an active member.
Very active.
As I was reading the book, I hadn't realized, although I obviously can't avoid that large blue building that I see sometimes, and that large electronic sign that's out there saying, having a problem with your life, come in and join.
Yes.
She became a Scientologist.
Yes,
and
John Travolta.
Okay, and What has it done for her, and what has she done for it, would you say?
Good question. Good way to put it. I think what it's done for her is it's provided kind of an insulation for her, in that Scientology is a sort of, and it's interesting because it's kind of a secret society, which sort of goes back to a thread that runs through Priscilla's life, which is secrets. We didn't talk about her childhood, but secrets are a big element of her childhood, and it's a part of who Priscilla is.
Right.
And I think because of the sort of secret aspect or secret nature to it, it's a buffer for her from all the sort of voyeurs, Elvis voyeurs, who see her as the keeper of the Elvis flame. And I think it's insulated her and it's protected her. What she has done for Scientology is sort of give it a higher profile, lend to it a legitimacy that, you know, no amount of money could possibly buy.
Any astounding findings that you've discovered through your book tour about the public's insatiable appetite for Elvisiana and Prisciliana?
I guess for me the most dramatic finding has been just the degree to which fans are so thrilled that this book has been written. They've just, you know, they have to a person come up to me and thanked me for doing this, and have said they felt this was sort of Elvis's turn to respond, in that Priscilla had her opportunity and Elvis and me.
Right.
And just a sense that now the story has been righted in some way.
So in a sense, you've collected some of the Elvis dust, and you've got some of it now.
Yeah.
You're passing out with the book, and that I've got here, and that we're sending out.
Exactly. We're sending out that Elvis dust.
And I'm sure he'd be happy about that.
You know, funny enough, I just spoke last night to Kathy Westmoreland, who is his backup singer and very much part of the whole spiritual quest that he was on, and she was in tears about the book, and she thanked me as well for writing it, and she said, you know, this is a book that Elvis really would have loved. I was hoping that someone would get it right. So it's really been very gratifying.
Well, I would say that you have gotten it right, and I want to thank you for writing Child Bride,
Suzanne Huffinstead, and
for talking to us here today on Book File.
Great fun, actually. Thanks.
You're welcome. This is Book Radio. I'm Mark Strassman. Our guest today is Donald